This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I am your host, Tim Murray, and as I look down at my wristwatch, I don't actually have a wristwatch, I see that it is Wednesday, and that means Wes Reynolds joins us. Wednesday with Wes. As always, please rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. We'll have a little bit of a different week next week. We'll combine the week breakdown with Wednesday with Wes, and Wes will join me at the D next Wednesday for that podcast. But let's not jump ahead. Let's welcome in the pride of Indiana, the biggest day of the football program's history upcoming. Mr. Reynolds, how are we feeling about the visit to the Shoe, Big Noon kickoff, College Game Day? It's the biggest game of the day. Your alma mater is 10-0. Biggest game in school history?
I would say so, Tim. Probably the biggest regular season game since well before you and I walked the earth in 1967, when Indiana had to beat Purdue in the bucket game to get to the Rose Bowl. So, yeah. Look, now this is getting serious, Tim. This is getting very real now. Throughout the season, I've just kind of been, as a fan and as an alum, just living in the moment and just enjoying the run while it's going. It's like, man, this just keeps getting better and better and better. But now it's getting serious. And how I can tell it's getting serious is that now Indiana, little Indiana, even though Kurt Cignetti called them we're an emerging superpower, apparently we are, because Indiana's starting to take the bullets now. I think Commissioner Sankey down there at the SEC sent out the bat signal to a lot of the media types to start picking apart and coming after Indiana. Hell, Tim, you got United States senators coming after Indiana, as I made clear yesterday. Check out the Twitter for my thoughts on that, saying that Indiana bought a football team, even though 14 of the 31 transfers this year came with Coach Sig and the staff from James Madison, and 25 of those 31, by the way, were from a group of five or lower, including our starting quarterback Curtis Rourke, who is in the MAC at Ohio University. So, to say that everybody is buying players with the NIL, but to say that Indiana bought a football team is ridiculous. And it's just the entitlement of a lot of these power programs that now they can't do what they do, because they were doing NIL before it was NIL and they were taking advantage of it while Indiana was getting it, kicked in every single week. And now there's a little bit more of a level playing field. But that's what's good about college football, isn't it, Tim? That you still have some power programs. You still have Ohio State in the mix. You still have Oregon. You still have Notre Dame. You still have Georgia. You still have Alabama. But you get some new guests to the party, like an Indiana or like a Boise State, or perhaps an SMU, certainly, I think, still very much in play out of the ACC, or a program that, whoever comes out of the Big 12, like a Colorado, who hadn't really been that relevant until Coach Prime came to Boulder the last couple of years. But it's just, Tim, I was, I was living in the moment, just kind of enjoying it and being happy that this is the best season that Indiana football has ever had in my lifetime. And now I'm getting angry. Now I'm getting hostile at some of these people that are, firing bullet after bullet at Indiana. It's like, well, who did they play? Well, who made it to where we have imbalanced schedules, Tim? The very television networks and the very media platforms that provide these analysts or pundits or whoever, whatever you want to call them, the microphone to rip Indiana, because they're the ones that push this conference realignment. And it's not Indiana saying, oh, we don't want to play Penn State. They weren't put on the schedule this year. That's just the way it goes. You've got imbalance in all these conferences because of these television networks pushing this conference realignment, and these schools are, horse for the dollar, and they're going to take the almighty buck. And yeah, sure, we'll leave that conference because we want all this TV money. So, all this discussion on Saturday gets put to rest, and Indiana has a chance to prove everybody wrong and, either be competitive or hell, go and win the game. Because I think everybody's assuming Indiana, they're just not going to win. Like, they should rest Curtis Rourke and protect him for game against Purdue. That take from Joey Galloway
was the dumbest thing I've ever
on the
heard.
ESPN show last night. I was like, are you crazy? You got to be insane. You go in there and compete. What? We're just going to admit defeat. Oh, we can't beat these guys. You know, these guys are just impossible. And yeah, I know the market has moved this number up to 13 and even some 13 and a half out there. But if you're Indiana, you're still undefeated, Tim. I don't care what the schedule is. This is still an undefeated team. There are three of them in the country, Indiana, Army, and Oregon. You are undefeated. Like, you don't have to make apologies to absolutely nobody, as Conor McGregor would once say.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm good. Well, let's adios. We're out of here. No, that was, a couple things I wanted to hit on here regarding this game. I don't know how you are when it comes to betting on or against your alma mater. I did not go to Notre Dame, but I pretend like I did. My dad went there, but I tend to not bet on or against them too often. Every once in a while, if it's just begging me.
All of us that are Catholics somehow went to Notre Dame, Tim.
we're the true Subway alums. That's what it's called. You know, we are not. I certainly wasn't smart enough. My sister was smart enough, and she went there. That's why she's the favorite. But I digress. Looking at this number, Indiana catching 13. Let's just start there before I have some thoughts about the playoff number that is out there. And I talked to Gil about it on a numbers game on Wednesday morning. But when you look at this number right now, Wes, the market, as you alluded to, has been bet up. It's up to 13, 13 and a half. Circa's at 13 and a half, excuse me. Total 51, 51 and a half. Indiana 8-2 ATS this year. Didn't cover their last game against Michigan prior to the bye. Didn't cover the opener against FIU. But what do you make of this number? And do you see value either way on this particular game?
Well, I'll start with the number. I'm not surprised to see that move based on a lot, because conversation does move the numbers. And it's like, oh, here we go with Indiana. They haven't played anybody. Like, this is when they're going to get, their comeuppance, if you will. So I understand the move. I think it was 9.5 on the look ahead, and then it was like 10, 10 and a half on Sunday. And now it's up to 13, 13 and a half. So I understand that. And I'll address my primary concern on the Indiana side first. And I think you saw it bear fruit in the second half of the Michigan game, is that they got beat a little bit up front. And that was the first time really all year that they did that. Now, Michigan, we know, is down from last year. That's why I think we talked about ad nauseum this summer under 9 season wins for the Wolverines. But I don't think we expected them to be like 5-5 right now. The drop has been precipitous just because they don't have the quarterback play. They don't have the game breakers at the skill positions, especially at wide receiver. But they're still pretty good up front on the offensive and defensive line. And I thought they got a little bit of the better of Indiana in the second half. And Ohio State, obviously very good in that regard. Now, Ohio State is taking a little bit of a beating. If you look it up front, I believe Seth McLaughlin, their starting center, tore his Achilles in practice. He is now out the rest of the season. And Ohio State's got a couple injuries up front as well. So Indiana, what's been the real difference for Indiana on that defense is that defensive line, especially Kamara, who transferred in from James Madison with Coach Sig, CJ West, who is a hell of a find out of Kent State, a program going nowhere, but a kid that has some NFL potential. And he's been great on the defensive line. So if Indiana can hold their own up front, and that's a Herculean task considering the fact that Ohio State, we look at the offense and the fact that they're maybe not the juggernaut that they have been. And I say that considering they rank top 10 in points and yards per game. But you understand what I'm saying. They have not been as explosive, I don't think, necessarily offensively this year. And maybe it's the quarterback play, Will Howard, who's been fine, but hasn't been certainly what Stroud was a couple years ago. It's been the defense that's carried this team. Number one in opponent points a game, number one in points per play, number two in yards a game, number two in yards a play. But where I think Indiana is going to have to make some headway is they're going to have to try to find a way to run the ball on this team. If they can just run the ball okay, I think that they can compete here. And look, Indiana is going to be plenty motivated. We know Coach Sig is not like a big rah-rah guy. He's very understated. He's very like direct and very blunt. I win, Google me. What are we, 10-0? Not bad, not bad at all. Like, he's kind of a trash talker, but in a subtle way. He's not, a ranner, a raver, a guy that's Mr. Rah-Rah, but he's going to have these guys motivated because they're going to have heard about this for 2 weeks now. So I think that they're going to come in here and compete. I'm going to be on Indiana, and maybe a little bit of homerism, Tim, but I think Indiana can compete here, and I think that they're going to shock a lot of people.
Well, and that's what leads me to my next question, which is the price to make or miss the playoff. And now the only price that I saw as of Wednesday was at FanDuel to have the two-way market. DraftKings, I think at some point later this week, probably will put up that two-way market. But I look at it, and when I'm prefacing it this way, I'm not a hater. I'm trying to be realistic. And I'm looking at the way the committee has dinged teams for losing. Georgia dropped 9 spots losing to Ole Miss. BYU dropped 8 spots losing to Kansas. Now, look, Kansas and Ohio State don't belong in the same breath. But if Indiana loses and the SEC is this kind of jumbled mess, do we have the discussion? Because you alluded to it. It's already started, right? The seeds are starting to be planted about, well, they have no big wins and no one's ranked and look at their strength of schedule. Like, do they have to be competitive? I think you answered the question. You think they will be. You're going to take the points. But if this is a 21-point Ohio State victory, I hate to speak it into existence to you, but could you see the committee pulling some shadiness and dropping Indiana significantly if they were to fall on the road at Ohio State?
Yeah, I absolutely think it would be a significant drop. And I think 21 is probably like the line of demarcation, right? You know, if you lose by more than that, you lose by 4 or 5 scores, then you're gonna sink like a stone. I think in these rankings. And look, you can always use a little bit of help, and you're probably gonna need a little bit of help where some of these 2-loss SEC teams are gonna have to get upset. Like, you know, if Auburn upsets Texas A&M, if Florida gets Ole Miss this weekend, then that puts them at 3 losses, and then it gets a little bit difficult. Yep. Now, 2-loss Georgia, 2-loss Alabama, if they run through like they should, then they're going to be in. But some of these 3-loss teams, you need a couple, maybe 1 or 2 of these teams, I think, to stay in, assuming that you take a pretty comfortable Ohio State victory into account, assuming that happens. That they're probably going to drop a little bit. And, you know, I was making little jokes, even though Indiana is part of the Big Ten and they're one of the two conferences that really control the sport along with the SEC, but it does kind of feel like Indiana's not a member of the cartel, right, Tim? You know, they're and you know what I'm saying here.
Yeah, no, yeah,
they're not one of the establishment teams. They're not a Georgia or a Notre Dame or an Alabama or, you know, other schools that, you know, certainly some that are having down years, USC, Oklahoma, you know, they're not programs like that. Okay. They're new to the party. I think from a television standpoint, it is kind of cool to have like a little bit of a Cinderella. They, you know, it's, and we talk about this, and we will this coming March about the NCAA tournament, where it's like you want that Cinderella in the first and second round. And then by the Sweet 16, you want them out. You yeah. want like they don't mind Indiana if they win like the first game, but they don't want Indiana in the semifinal because it's Indiana. And, you know, they don't have a lot of recent year success really in program history. So, yeah, I think that they'll drop. I don't know if they'll drop completely out of the rankings, Tim, just because I think when you look at it, can you make a case that they're going to be 2 ACC teams or 2 Big 12 teams? I don't know. The Big 12 is such a jumbled. The Big 12 is such a jumbled mess. You've got 4 teams, and really the top 3 control their own destiny to make that NCAA or the Big 12 championship, I should say. BYU, Colorado, Arizona State would control. If Arizona State wins out, they're going to be in the Big 12 championship game. Who would have thought that? But it's such a jumbled mess. And then with Clemson losing they hung on against Pitt, but you basically have Clemson, Miami, and SMU. They're the only ones with the chance. I just don't see 2 teams getting in out of the ACC and the Big 12, and I certainly don't see 2 group of 5 teams.
No, I think you're 100% right. The way I look at it, and I'll try to do it quickly, group of 5, obviously auto bid, whether it's be Boise State, UNLV, if they were to sneak up, or Tulane Army, yep. One of those 4 is getting in. I think it's pretty clear, especially with BYU losing to Kansas. It'll be 1 Big 12 team. I think it'll be 1 ACC team. And then the question is, If Notre Dame runs the table, beats Army and USC, they are in. If Texas A&M beats Texas, I think things get very weird regarding that situation, assuming, and maybe it's a big assumption, and we'll get to this on the other side of the break, Texas A&M takes care of business against Auburn. That line a little fishy this weekend, but I would need a bigger number. I'm a little intrigued by Indiana to miss the playoff, but I would need a bigger number. And once again, I said this with Gil, I don't think they should be knocked out of the playoff. I want Indiana in there. They've been dominant against the teams that they've played. I think that means something, but we will see. Hopefully
they'll be on the bubble.
Yeah, hopefully for your sake, they cover this game. And I think if they cover, I think that should certainly keep them in the playoff field. All right, Wes, let's take a quick break. On the other side, let's hit on the four situational spots that you're looking at this weekend, as well as the double-digit dog that will come home outright this weekend that Wes absolutely nailed last week on this show. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
We're back. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast along with Wes Reynolds. I am Tim Murray. You could follow him at Wes Reynolds 1. I'm at 1 Tim Murray. No confusion at all with those Twitter handles. We just like to let everyone know that we're number one way or another. We will hit on the double-digit dog that will come home this week. We had four last week come home. We've had one every single week, and Wes absolutely nailed it. Don't believe me? We got proof. Go back, listen to the tape. He had New Mexico. I'm just mad at myself. I didn't bet it. I looked at that game all week, and I did not bet it. I'm annoyed with myself, but great hit by you. Let's hit some situational spots, and we'll go in chronological order. So let's go Friday night in San Jose. I know you, me, Matt Humans, JVT, Scott Van Pelt, my friend, and I think our mutual friend Stucky over at the Action Network. We all were on the Spartans, and good God, that was disgusting. And Scott Van Pelt doesn't need our accolades or praise, but what a tremendous, tremendous bad beat segment on Monday, and he did an incredible job as he always does. So, are you going back to the well? Are you asking for more pain? Are you taking 7.5 with San Jose State?
I embrace pain, Tim. You know that in a lot of aspects of my life, not just with sports betting. But the woo-woo, as Scott said, Monday night happened. And, we were taking the double digits. I actually only had the 14. I didn't even have the hook. Some guys had the hook, the 14.5. And I think it went up to 15 some places. You're up 14-0. It's like, man, it's going to take 5 scores. We're going to have to get outscored by 5 scores the rest of the way to beat us. And sure as hell it did. Pick 6, and then San Jose State gets down to the 1, can't get into the end zone, 42-21. Now they get UNLV. UNLV, by the way, made an appearance in the college football playoff rankings for the first time. 8-2 certainly would need a lot of help because they had that head-to-head loss against Boise State. So they're going to absolutely, I think, need a little bit of help here. And Tulane losing would certainly help that cause. But yeah, I'm gonna take, and there's a couple eights out there. It's mostly 7.5 in the market. I'm going to take San Jose State. Look, I've liked their offense this year. This is not Coach Ken in Annapolis that you're very familiar with running the triple option. They're running, that modified run and shoot. I forget what the new name of it is. I think you would know that.
Spread and shred.
Spread and shred, yes. Modified run and shoot from that June Jones tree out in Hawaii that Craig Stutzman played for him. He's the offensive coordinator at San Jose. So, look, UNLV, I wonder, how you're going to deal with the pressure. They had the pressure of being 4-0 and had Syracuse in, and a game that they could have won. Syracuse pulls it out in overtime, and then they had it with Boise State at home. and fell just a little bit short. So it's not like they face planted in a pressure situation, but they did lose both of those games. And now you go to San Jose State, and then you got the Fremont Cannon game against Nevada Reno, the Wolfpack, the following week. So that's a rivalry game at home at Allegiant. And I think that this is a little bit of a tricky game for UNLV. It's going to be high scoring with a total of 61. So I'm gonna take the Spartans here. And I think a lot of people might want to stay away from them because of the pain that happened last week out there at Spartan Stadium. But I'm going back for more.
Well, I want to stick with the Mountain West because one of my plays, and I talked to JVT on Tuesday about it, is Fresno State.
Last time I played that as well.
Yeah, last time we saw Fresno State before the bye, it was a best bet for it wasn't a best bet for me. Air Force went in there, ran it all over them, and then I took Air Force last week after I saw what they did to Fresno, and that was thankfully a rocking chair winner. But I think this Colorado State team, you know, credit to Jay Norvell and the turnaround. There's some fool's gold in this team, and I know a lot of people had Wyoming last week. That didn't get home, but I think this spot, Fresno State at home, you know, and we're going to talk about the, you know, the bowl tax and all of that, what teams are motivated, what teams are not. I think Fresno coming off a bye, opportunity to affect the Mountain West championship game. And look, this is a team that we thought would, you know, be challenging for the Mountain West. They have their coach retire early before the season. I think this is the spot, win your final game at home, be bowl eligible. They wrap up at UCLA. So whether you want to lay the three or find the cheapest money line, there were a minus 142 out there earlier in the week when we talked about it. But I'm on Fresno State. I like the spot here against Colorado State. And this would be fantastic for UNLV, assuming they avoid the loss on Friday night. Because if they win this game, then they're back in the driver's seat to make it to the Mountain West Championship game. Which, to be honest, let's be honest, as football fans, we'd much rather see UNLV go to the Smurf Turf for the Mountain West Championship than Colorado State.
Yeah, I think so, too. And look, Colorado State, if you look at the stats last week, they dominated Wyoming. But if you watch that game, Wyoming had numerous chances to backdoor last week, getting 9.5, getting 10. I think they had three drop passes that were wide open on that final drive to get into the back door against Colorado State. And also with Fresno State, you know, they are off the bye, but they've had two cracks at getting that sixth win. Against Hawaii, they lose at home as favorites, and then they lose as road favorites at Air Force, who's obviously had a rebuilding year in Colorado Springs. So now you've got a final chance here to get dead. Well, you do go to UCLA the following week to close out the season, but this is your third chance. I think the third time's a charm. They get that sixth win here.
All right, let's go to a couple other situational spots here. Let's go to Penn State, Minnesota. This is a game that I was staring at. We saw a little bit of market movement on Wednesday morning. The 12s were getting scooped up, 11.5 still readily available. You know, this was a game that I initially looked at, and I've wavered. Maybe you can get me over the top one side or the other, because I looked at Minnesota. They've fared well in this dog role. I had them against USC earlier in the year at home. I think they were catching 4 or 5, if I remember correctly, won the game outright in that kind of wacky finish. Penn State, you know, kind of like your Hoosiers, getting some flack a little bit. Who have you beaten? You know, James Franklin has normally done well in this big favorite role, but I lean a little bit Gophers here. I'm curious your angle on this one.
Yeah, look, I've been Minnesota's a team I've gotten right for the most part this season, kind of knowing when to buy this team and when to sell this team. It was a really good sell spot a couple weeks ago at Rutgers,
yep,
where they lost because they had won a couple in a row. I think they'd won like three in a row. So, you know, all of a sudden they go to Rutgers, and Rutgers had been struggling, and Rutgers did get them after that 4-game winning streak that started with the USC, where the buy sign kind of for Minnesota was when they came back against Michigan on the road when they were big underdogs and they actually had a chance. If they would have ruled that onside kick properly, they might have beaten Michigan late. But you just look at how many points you're getting here. And I know James Franklin can play the bully against lesser competition. This is a Minnesota defense that is, I think, a top 20 unit in the nation. Points per game, yards per game, points per play, fourth down conversions, a lot of the different metrics. They are top 20 in the country. Now, the offense, you know, doesn't really necessarily do much for you. Even though that passing game, Brosmer has gotten better, I think, throughout the season. Come off the bye, getting Penn State. I think that this is a little tricky one for Penn State going up there to Minneapolis. Certainly they're motivated, but you're already paying the tax. And it's come down a little bit from the 12.5. You're seeing 11s and 11.5 right now. So row the damn boat, Tim. We're going with the
Gophers. Sky Yuma.
Yes.
Sky Yuma. There we go. Let's make it happen. All right, let's go to Arrowhead Stadium. This is a game that I grabbed the 3. You know, it's funny. You and I both loved Kansas last week on the road at BYU. We felt like eventually this horseshoe up there, you know what, was going to end. And to be honest, Kansas, they get the fortunate break, the pooch punt that goes off the BYU player's face mask. They recover it. They get the touchdown. They get the stop inside the 10-yard line. I know many of us were thinking, especially those who didn't get the 3.5 early in the week, oh my God, they're going to do it again. They're going to score this touchdown and BYU is going to win. Didn't happen. Kansas gets the win. I was a little disappointed in the offense after that opening drive, but this is a tricky spot for Colorado, right? Travis Hunter now massive favorite to win the Heisman Trophy, as he should be. Colorado very much in the discussion to make the playoff. They're the favorites to win the Big 12. This isn't in Lawrence. It's at Arrowhead, but if you can get 3, I'm certainly intrigued. I took some 3 earlier this week. What do you make of Colorado, Kansas?
Yeah, I've got Kansas plus 3 as well. I'm going back to the well. I've been on them the last 2 weeks. So ride until you get thrown off. And that's what I'm going to do here with KU. And look, the defense for Kansas, like, they were on the field maybe a little bit too much, but they got stops. And that's really been a little bit of the weakness of this team. They started to get stops. It's starting to get a little bit better, and there's some fortune finally going their way. You know, going into last week, they were 0-5 in one score games, and they finally got one. And BYU finally had one that goes against them. Colorado did get the cover. It was a little bit more cosmetic, though. At the end, Utah had cut it to a 2-score game, and Colorado got 2 late touchdowns in the final 5 minutes. Utah, who hasn't been able to move the ball at all, they were able to move the ball through the air. They weren't able to run on Colorado, but you know, the Buffs weren't really that sharp either last week. They had to get 4 turnovers, and they gave it away 3 times, but I still worry a little bit about Colorado, because as much as they've improved, and I think they've improved defensively, and obviously Shedeur Sanders has been in great form pretty much all year, they still can't run the ball, Tim. They're 132nd in rushing yards per game, 131st in yards per rush, 124th in rush attempts per game. They can't run the ball at all. So this is going to have to be the Shedeur show. And as good as he's been, he can turn it over and throw a couple up for grabs every once in a while, even though his decision making, I think, is pretty good by the most part. But yeah, I'm going to go with Kansas here. I think that this is going to be, and you see it more in I think pro than you do in college, this is going to be that proverbial pros versus Joes, I think, because now you're starting to see Colorado 2.5. It's like, oh my God, Coach Prime 2.5 against a 4-6 Kansas team and what's essentially a neutral site game. Like, sign me up. Not so fast. I'm going with the Jayhawks here.
Yeah, Colorado, by the way, 8-2 against the spread this year. One of the best cover teams in college football. There's a couple Big 12 teams up there. Your Hoosiers, not in the Big 12. Arizona State, also 8-2 against the spread this year. And Baylor, believe it or not, 7-3 against the spread on the season. Let's go to a game in that noon window that humans and I always joke, we hate having bets in that noon Eastern 9 a.m. our time window, because it just kind of ruins the day if you don't come home.
Because I've been there. Sometimes when you start bad, it's like, oh my God, now you got to play catch up.
No, I'm not going to win any games today. But let's go to the good old, I have to double check. I think this is... is this the CW game of the day? I want to double check.
I think it might be.
Yeah, Tom Brenneman going up to Chestnut Hill. So Boston College catching 3 at home against UNC.
But this time around, Tom Brenneman will not have Castellanos.
That's
because
Thomas
Castellanos goes in the transfer portal after he got benched against Syracuse. I thought the kid Grayson James, you know, he was up and down, as you would expect in a road start. But I thought he was okay last week. And BC was right there with SMU and ended up playing out and finishing as a 10-point game. But BC had the lead in the second half, and they were only down three with 6 minutes to go. SMU, by the way, got a touchdown late with 13 seconds left to go to improve that victory margin. But this was a dead even game between BC and SMU, and that's a tough spot for BC. That went up to what, 19 last week, and yeah. I wish I would have grabbed it, and I didn't. But I think Boston College, I like them at home here because they're 5-5 trying to get bowl eligible. And there are different situations throughout the board. And you have to obviously take each game as his own unique organism, if you will. But when you get a team that just wins that sixth game, which North Carolina did last week against Wake Forest, there's a sense of accomplishment and there's maybe a little bit of a sense of relief. Okay, we got bowl eligible, so we at least accomplished something, when you know that you're not going to be in the race for a conference championship or a playoff spot or anything like that. So I think the sense of urgency here is on the BC side with Bill O'Brien. They can really run the ball, and that's what they did against Syracuse a couple weeks ago. That was a pretty impressive win, I thought, from BC. So, you know, laying three on the road, Carolina, you worry about that defense, Tim. It's been the same old song and dance, I think, really, since Mack Brown has been back. Potent offense, even though it's a little bit less so this year with essentially now your third quarterback. But this Carolina defense on the road, I don't know if I really want to lay these guys, even though their numbers are not the pits like they've been the last couple years. But they're still bottom half of the country in pretty much almost all the metrics, especially giving up points in the red zone. So give me the BC Eagles. Bill O'Brien gets Chestnut Hill going bowling here.
Yeah, Boston College was a best bet for me 2 weeks ago when they beat Syracuse. And let's get to Syracuse, because I think this is quite the spot. So last week we saw Liberty go on the road to UMass and need overtime to win over the Minutemen. And I bring that game up because this is quite the spot for Syracuse. They went on the road, double-digit dog, beat Cal last week. Fran Brown, you know, kudos to him. He's done a phenomenal job. They won on the road at UNLV. They beat Georgia Tech when they were ranked earlier this year. I had them in that spot. But this is a weird spot because next week, Syracuse has an opportunity to upset the apple cart. At home, they play Miami, and you know that's probably going to be a spot where you and me, Wes, will be looking at the home dog in Syracuse. But this week, they're laying 10.5. I was actually able to get an 11.5 on Sunday at FanDuel, but I think 10.5 is fine, against UConn. UConn's good. Jim Mora Jr.'s had a really good year. They're bowl eligible. They've been competitive in a bunch of games so far this year. They covered on the road at Duke early on in the season. And I'm just curious about Syracuse here. You have the cross-country travel. You've got Miami next week. And now you have this bizarre non-conference game. And I know UConn's going to be ready to go, right? This is an opportunity for them to make a big statement. It's on national television. So I took the points with UConn here. I think it's a great situational spot for UConn. I don't know what they're doing at quarterback, whether it's Evers or Fagnano, or if they're going to play both of them. But I think Mora's done an incredible job in his 3 years there. So give me the points with UConn, another noon Eastern game in the ACC.
Well, let's go 2-for-1 special here, because we were going to pick our outright double-digit underdog. This is going to be mine, Tim, and I hadn't bet it yet. I'm probably going to at 10.5, a little bit of the worst number on the opener. But, I think the Huskies here. And for what you mentioned, Syracuse going as a double-digit road underdog at Cal. And I know that played out to a one-score game, but that was a dominant Syracuse performance if you watch the game. Cal made that really cosmetic. Syracuse was up 3 touchdowns at the half, ends up winning 33-25. Really outplayed them. And now they come home and they're a double-digit favorite against a UConn team, to be fair, that every time they've stepped up against the Power Four, they've come up short. They got blown out at Maryland, lost a close one at Duke, lost a close one at home to Wake Forest. So their wins, Merrimack, FAU, Buffalo, Temple, Rice, Georgia State, UAB, not a lot to write home about, but it's 7 wins, and UConn is going bowling. But I think Jim Mora Jr. and his club, they might treat this a little bit as their bowl game, because you look at UConn in terms of their schedule of wins. It's not quite as easy as the UConn basketball team so far this year, where they haven't played anybody.
What the hell is West Texas A&M? I've never heard of that school.
It used to be Texas A&M Commerce,
who
UConn actually didn't cover against last night. And Danny Hurley, I don't think, was very happy about it, because he knows those numbers. He'd like to cover against these teams. But anywho, and that's what makes him the coach of the year, two-time defending national champion. But anyway, back to the gridiron. Look, I think UConn, they're going to take this seriously, because probably some of these kids were recruited by Syracuse. Maybe they were like backup plans. You know what I mean? Like, if we don't get this guy, then we're interested in this guy. So I think UConn, a lot of these players might take this pretty personally. It is an old school Big East rivalry, even though we don't have the Big East in football anymore. And only one of them are in the Big East in basketball. But I think UConn is going to go up there and really want this one, because they close at Syracuse and then they close at UMass. So those are kind of their two rivalries. So they're going to treat this almost like as a second bowl game here. And I like the Huskies. I think they could get it out right at the Carrier Dome.
Well, let's remind you of October 19th. UConn loses to Wake Forest, a game that, I'll be honest, I was not intuitively watching. But Jim Mora, after the game, said, quote, "We've got to make sure that we put ourselves in a position where it doesn't come down to one play where an ACC team makes a horse bleep call against an independent. And that's on us to play better at the start of the game so it doesn't come down to that call," which was holding.
Yes.
So
yes.
He was. He will be reminding his team of that. UConn coming off the bye, too. So I agree. It may be worth a little bit of a money line flyer there for
and I will spot. Say one more thing on Syracuse. Very one-dimensional offensively. Now, they've got one dimension where they're pretty damn good, which is throwing the football. They comma court those at the most per game of anybody, and the passing yards are obviously high. They can't run the ball at all, Tim. They're I think, 132nd in rush play percentage, and that's because they can't run the ball. And I think making that one dimension, UConn's not a bad little defense here. I think they're only giving up 21.8 a game. I know the schedule has been weak, but they're good on third down. They're good in terms of the yards per play. So UConn's definitely going to hang in here. And if there's that one play at the end, we know Kyle McCord, as good as he's been, he can throw it to the other team on a fair amount of occasions. So I think that that's what happens here, is that UConn gets some turnovers and they're going to be live to win it at the end.
All right. We are in agreement on that one. We're taking the Huskies there in a AC. This game should be played on Monday night at 9 p.m., you know, old school Big Monday style. But
it would have been better than last Monday night's game.
That is the truth. One final game I wanted to hit on, because Mike Elko hilariously made a slip up this week when asked about if his team would be looking ahead to next week when they play Texas. And he said the right things, you know. We're focused. I know the outside noise might be thinking about how we're looking ahead, but we're focused on Texas. I mean, Auburn. So
yes.
That was a nice little slip up there. Look, I love me some stinky lines. This line is maybe the stinkiest of the week. The fact that Texas A&M only laying 2.5. I think you wait. I think if you do like War Eagle, I think there will be a 3 that shows up. DraftKings had a 3 on Tuesday. You'll probably get a 3, I would guess. But I'm curious your thoughts on this one before we get out of here, because at 3, I'm going to hold my nose and take Auburn in a night game against Texas A&M in a massive look-ahead spot for the Aggies.
Yeah, look, this isn't like the South Carolina spot a few weeks ago.
Oh, no.
Where we jumped right in on the home dog with the Gamecocks, and then they really put them away and dominated the entire second half. Auburn, I'm not quite there yet. If I play this, I'll end up on War Eagle, but yeah, I want to wait a little bit because I think you may get it. Auburn took out their frustrations, I think, of the season on UL Monroe, an improved UL Monroe team, by the way, and, you know, took out their frustrations and looked pretty good against subpar competition. But there's been a lot of times with Auburn this year, like Vanderbilt. I thought that was a home run spot, and they only scored 7 points.
Yep,
I agree. They blow it late against Oklahoma. They've had so many opportunities this year, and I thought they were going to be improved, and they really haven't improved that much in Hugh Freeze's second year. Of course, they have Alabama the next week. I don't think that's as much of a look ahead as it might be on the Texas A&M side, because Texas and Texas A&M didn't play for a few years because of the conference realignment. So now it feels like that rivalry is back as a conference rivalry, old school Southwest Conference, old school Big 12. I don't think Auburn's necessarily looking ahead to the Iron Bowl here. I think you're 4-6. You got to pull this and, you know, at least have some bowl eligibility on the line when you go to Tuscaloosa the following week. So lean Auburn, just haven't gotten there on the number yet.
He is Wes Reynolds. Follow him on Twitter at WesReynolds1. Of course, catch him every Wednesday here on this podcast, a number of other spots throughout the week, and then Live Bet Saturday, Live Bet Sunday, and on VSiN.com. Wes, always appreciate it. Best of luck to your Hoosiers on Saturday.
Go Big Red. Yes, Indiana. It's nice to be relevant, but, you know, hopefully we keep that relevance into Bucket Week next week.
Please rate, review, and subscribe. This is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Back with Matt Eubanks tomorrow.